This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Monday, 14th June, 2021, and we have U.S. markets at least closing close to or at those all-time highs. With a pretty solid session on Friday, pretty low energy, but we did manage to scrape higher. And the futures are up over 14,000 overnight in the U.S. for the Nasdaq 100. We talked about this last week that what we're seeing playing out to some degree, at least, is this correlation with interest rates, which looks great because it's been positive for equities. But it just gives, a background bit of concern, at least to my mind, to see this positive correlation, which is very unusual over the last 20 years. We've talked about the contributors to lower interest rates being also potentially something that can't last forever because it's about the liquidity from the Fed's QE, as well as the Treasury running down its general account. And the latest data point there showing that we're making considerable further progress. But that once we get below the 500 billion mark there, which is another 200 billion-ish away, this liquidity situation could change quite rapidly. So crazy mix of things I just threw at you there, Peter. But in other words, it's just not all coming up roses here. What are your thoughts for this market here?
Well, we're back to some of the old themes we have known for years, which is basically that of low volatility and, you know, interest rates driving growth stocks versus value. I mean, you see that on slide 2 with your NASDAQ chart there, John. So we're back flirting with the highest levels. We could very well be within a few points of a all-time high on the close in the NASDAQ 100. We'll obviously be watching that today. But you saw the performance last week, especially also when you take it on sorted on the months to date on slide 3, our theme baskets, and you see it very clearly. Bubble stocks up 4.5%. The next gen medicine basket, obviously impacted by the Biogen news on their Alzheimer drug, but also e-commerce, etc., battery stocks themes. So it's the interest rate sensitivity that is back favoring these growth stocks. The volatility we had at the first week, we closed below 16, which is the first since we had the jump on the pandemic more than a year ago. So I think the market is settling into a lot of calm before the next storm brews, and that is the $100 million question on the inflation. What sticks and what doesn't stick, basically, and we'll be a lot wiser in a few months. So maybe late summer months, I think volatility could pick up, but for at least the next month, I think it could be very very dull in the financial markets. On slide 4, I just put in this this chart where we take the U.S. Treasury Total Return Index, which is the official Barclays benchmark index on treasuries, and we subtract the U.S. CPI, and this is a 5-month chart. So you can basically see that you have had almost zero real rate return after inflation over a 5-year period. And interesting enough, the last 2 months when interest rates have dropped and you have got gains again in the treasury, these are being eaten away by inflation. With the current trajectory, and we showed that on Friday with the positive autocorrelation in month-on-month inflation rates, we know where as soon as inflation is out there, it tends to stick and be much more stickier than expected, just like volatility. So I think we're in for a shocker, but it's not now. It will probably be later this year, but it's really something having in mind, you know, at these current rates of inflation and interest rates, you're not being offered anything in U.S. Treasuries, and it can't continue forever.
Yeah, and you bring up two things there. The fact that it's really hard to get a reading on inflation when we know about all these disruptions and some of the one-off things that are causing the extremeness of the spike, but there are other aspects that could prove, of course, more durable. And then whether we're getting a proper signal from the Treasury market. Again, is this a side effect of excess liquidity, ironically driving Treasury yields to these, or keeping them suppressed and even lower in some cases? It's a very confusing mix, and I think we'll be, as you say, a lot wiser in a few months' time. And now, Ole, looks like you've updated your latest or this chart series of charts you have on key container freight routes. And this issue is simply not going away. We've seen in the past some of these shipping rate indexes get to remarkable levels, and they reverse quite strongly. But so far, this is looking very expensive to get shipments done here.
Absolutely. Just take a look at the slide five. Just the 5 year range we've seen prior to what's happened since the pandemic last year. Normal rates hovering within a relatively tight range, but it's just we just seen those rates explode to the upside. The composite benchmark is now almost 5x normal levels. Really is adding to the cost of transporting goods around the world. Several factors, but I think the one that's really that has kicked off and kicked in the past few weeks and also mentioned by Maersk is the increased port congestion in China. They have some virus outbreaks, which has led to a reduction in activity, and that's basically just slowing down the process even further. And many of these routes are clearly the main routes from Asia to Europe and to the US, and we can see how buyers of goods are just simply scrambling for containers. So it's a very profitable period to be a ship at this moment in time.
Yeah, and then if we go over to I wanted to wrap up the Friday action because it was a bit interesting. You have a equity market that's doing very well and doesn't seem to have any fear in its eyes. Looking forward to this Wednesday's FOMC meeting, obviously the key event risk of the week, and yet the dollar was quite notably stronger on Friday. I'm not sure I have any explanation there, except maybe that the dollar bears are a bit reluctant to hold positions when nothing's been going on and there's been no momentum in that dollar trade, and fearing that the Fed is set for at least opening up a two-way message. I'll add a bit to that guidance or our preview of the FOMC meeting a bit later. But for now, we have is looking on slide, I skipped to slide seven here, the overview of trends, extremely low readings almost across the board. A couple things that stick out, the Swiss franc pulling up makes some sense in light of weaker yields, but why hasn't the yen done a better job of rallying? It's trying a little bit. You can see the momentum shifting quite positive, but that yen is really a head scratcher for me if long rates stay low. Kiwi, not really much worth mentioning there. And gold has gone flat. So Ola, I guess gold traders certainly seem to be waiting for this FOMC meeting. We hit the 1900 plus level, couldn't take it out effectively. And I suppose that's the whole question for precious metals traders, if they're going to get some kind of signal from the Fed this week.
Yeah, that would be the focus right now. And I think we saw a bit of warning last week, the fact that we saw this the continued drop in yields, especially also real yields, which came close to the negative 1%. And even though we had this quite big tailwind in the market, gold really struggled to break back above $1,900. It does indicate that, as we highlighted now for a few weeks, that this tailwind that the gold market has been had since the low in April from longer term trend following short being covered, that process is now out of the way, and we are in for a period of consolidation here. And so far, as you can see on the chart here on slide nine, it is a relatively shallow correction so far. Obviously, all corrections are painful if you're sitting on the long side, but we have to look at to the downside. Potentially that 200-day moving average, 1840, or even as low as 1825. Even if we bounce off 1825, it's just a weak correction within a strong uptrend. So all is not lost at all. But obviously, the Fed signal on Wednesday will be quite important for the market at this stage.
Yeah, and then just interesting as well, we had the dollar firming on Friday. We had things like the Russian Central Bank meeting those expectations with a 50 basis point cut and even guiding for further rate cuts, about as hawkish as you could expect, wanting to buttress the idea that the currency will stability will be maintained to counter inflationary risks. So dollar ruble absorbing that news and actually sticking to a slightly higher level by the end of the day. But dollar try actually was quite a bit lower, and it's selling off again this morning. I think this is a very interesting week for the Turkish lira, with Erdogan and Biden meeting today, trying to make friendly tones ahead of that meeting. There's a Turkish central bank meeting on Thursday. Looking at where Turkish inflation is versus the policy rate, as long as they don't signal anything too aggressive on wanting to eventually start cutting rates there, I wonder if that's a value proposition. Always plenty of risk in trading the Turkish lira, but risk reward certainly looks more attractive there than some of the other EM currencies that have run up very aggressively on a quite supportive backdrop of low credit spreads, etc. But all this is going to, I think, key off of what the dollar does post FOMC. But just to round out the commodity space, you have a lot of agricultural focus, it seems, Ola, in your talking about where funds are looking to invest.
Yeah, we have the past few weeks now, we've actually seen, even though grain market's been doing reasonably well, we've seen speculators basically starting to get their exposure down in that market. And if you just start off on with slide 8, I just highlight the weekly commitment traders positioning. And what we can see, and that has now been ongoing for the past few weeks, that the funds are basically switching out of metals to a lesser extent than agricultural. Primarily agricultural exposure is being reduced, and the beneficiary right now is the energy sector, where we're seeing strong demand for crude oil. Natural gas is also picking up. The products are picking up, basically on the assumption that the increased demand will not be met by OPEC Plus turning up the taps to meet that extra demand. So there is a feeling in the market that OPEC Plus will continue to support the price by not adding more than just about enough supply into the market, and they currently hold the sway over the market with the spare capacity. So the grain market, it is a short cycle market, and right now we've got improved weather outlook both in Russia. We've got some good news out of Argentina. We have and we've got weather outlook in the US also improving. So on slide 10 here, you can see how the top right, how the speculative interest for corn, wheat, and soybeans has been drifting lower now, even though during this time we've seen these multi-year highs in being reached before this current correction. So it just highlights the risk to the grain market. If weather really starts to improve or continue to be good here in Europe, and especially in the US, then there is quite a speculative long that potentially could be at risk. So that's just creating that volatility we're seeing right now. And I just put in a couple of current drivers, reasons why the market is weaker today. But you can see that for yourself on slide 10.
All right, we have a European championship soccer tournament or football tournament, sorry, British listeners, going on, of course. And we've put up our Saxo Strats League, or sorry, Saxo Euro 2021 League on UEFA.com. We have a lot of interest here. 293 teams signing up. I'm not sure, Peter, if it's too late to add your team. I guess if you already identified a team, you can just add it into the league. But the status is looking pretty bad there for our team. I'm happy to say my personal team is about 70 places above FC Saxo Strats. But what's the status there? And talk us through what you're doing with the great Footonomics articles that you and Steen are putting together.
Easy tiger. We are 222 out of 293. Not the best start, to say the least, but we have also to acknowledge that a lot of our players on the team hasn't been playing yet. So we have a calm hand so far, although it doesn't look that good. And you can do a lot of the transfers. And you also have a wild card in this fantasy football game. But we're sticking to our gun for now. But I also want to highlight as well that we're putting out every day these Footonomics. Steen Jacobs and I, myself, where we look at some macro and equity information pictures between the two games. Between the two teams playing against each other. So, for instance, the other day we had England playing Croatia, and there we looked at, you know, Unilever, which is the biggest company with a headquarter in England, versus Ina Industria Nafte from Croatia, which is the largest integrated oil maker on Balkan, and we look at these things, and, you know, Steen looks at the Mishra Index. It's quite good fun, and it gives you some flavor, and it gives us the ability for us to actually talk about, you know, macro fundamentals and agri fundamentals on things that we not normally are talking about. But shifting gear a little bit, John, the earnings calendar is very, very thin, to say the least. We are off the normal quarterly calendar. So for this week, we only have 5 earnings releases to talk about. Tomorrow, Oracle will probably be the biggest one. And then we have Lennar. And then we have on Thursday, we have Adobe. And although Oracle is the biggest company, I've highlighted Lennar and Adobe in red, because I think that is where the sentiment is the most interesting. So Lennar is in the US home builder segment, and US housing prices is going very strong, and there's a lot of risk appetite in the U.S. housing. There's a U.S. housing shortage, basically. So it will be very interesting to hear what Lennar is saying about the outlook and the market. I've put in Lennar's share price here on slide 12, so you can see how that has performed since the bottom during the pandemic. And then I have a very small insert there on Adobe. It's actually a graphic from an article I did earlier this year, where I just showed you that currently with the current equity risk premium and the current US 10-year yield, then based on the expectations for revenue growth and profitability at Adobe, the stock actually has an expected return or very just below 10% annualized. But as you can see here, given different input parameters on the US 10-year yield and the equity risk premium, which is basically a function of investors' risk preferences, you can see that the annualized return of a company like Adobe can change very dramatically. So as you know, this is just another way of saying that the outlook is extremely important for Adobe.
Yeah, especially if they're unable to continue ratcheting up their pricing as a monopoly company. It's a very interesting company to look at on a valuation basis, and how it trades like a bond in some respects. Also very interesting that chart in Lennar, when you have the housing market, like you indicated, just white hot. And it's well below the highs of the cycle there on the actual share price. Let's go to the preview, okay? The macro highlights for the week. And obviously, two things I want to pull out here on the U.S. side would be tomorrow's retail sales. Again, watching for the scale and steepness of any stimulus speed bump. So we had the stimulus checks out in March, where we saw that absolutely gigantic rise in sales. Some of that feeding in through to April, which it managed to maintain relatively unchanged level. And then, do we get a hangover already in May, or is the opening up providing the offsetting compensation there? It's very interesting, I think, to watch that number. FOMC on Wednesday. I have to believe that the Fed, given what's going on with this reverse repo facility exploding in size, signs of excess liquidity, and of course some of the data we've seen, that they need to open up for a two-way message. As I think I indicated on the podcast, but certainly in internal meetings, I think that I think they must be quite impressed that that they managed to sort of raise the taper issue and hint at it. Well, one day we'll talk about tapering without the market having any indigestion and receiving that message. So I think they maybe feel emboldened to get a bit more aggressive in talking about a two-way message. What that means and how, whether the market is sort of already pricing this to a degree that is the key question around that FOMC meeting. But it's an important one. They have to come out with their new forecasts, and that'll be very interesting given things like the 2.4% PCE core inflation forecast they had in March for this year, and then that falling to 2% next year, as well as, of course, the unemployment forecasts, and perhaps just as importantly, the dot plot, where we saw a few votes go towards an earlier liftoff for the rate hike cycle, but still the median out there for 2024, which just looks so far away at this stage. But we'll see. That's the important one. Turkish Central Bank on Thursday has indicated a few other bits and pieces, as you can see on slide 13 with the calendar highlights for this week. That's a wrap for today, folks. We will be back tomorrow with Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call, or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.